Ah, yes, and we've got John Hogue. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll get into his prophecies next on Coast to Coast AM. John, there's an asteroid that's going to come pretty close to the planet in just a few hours. Most experts say it'll miss us. Anything there from the prophecies of Nostradamus or of John Hogue?
Well, it's interesting because it's about the size of the Sears Tower in Chicago, and there has been some talk about it passing through the magnetic field and some potential of, because of being negatively charged to the Earth, creating some kind of plasma arc, like a big aurora borealis phenomenon. And even though that sounds a bit far-fetched, the parallel to the 1908, well, how about that? It's 100 years ago.
Tunguska.
Since the explosion over the boreal forests of Siberia. When reports, I wrote about that in my book on St. Malachi's prophecies, because it was one of the symbolic predictions of a burning star, and was supposed to be during the time of that particular pope's reign. And so I talked about it. It's the first time I wrote about it. And what I uncovered was a story that was in a lot of the newspapers all around the Northern Hemisphere, was an unusual glow in the northern sky that some people attributed later on to the huge plume of a mushroom cloud that must have risen so high in the atmosphere that it caught the rays of the sun and created this glow that was seen in St. Petersburg. It was seen in Canada and northern parts of the United States on that cloudless night. But I sometimes wonder if it perhaps was a glow, because it lasted for a few hours, and maybe it was the glow of some plasma phenomenon of the asteroid back in 1908 coming through the magnetic field before it exploded in the atmosphere over Siberia. So, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to see it because here in the Seattle area, we're, as usual, under clouds and even snow. So, which is rare for us. So we'll have to see. But I don't see anything in this or the Martian near miss that's coming in a few more days that will take on the significance that usually ancient prophets take on things, or prophets of more recent times like Nostradamus. Because, for instance, I get all the time emails from folks talking about a comet in the sky, for instance, the Holmes comet. I got a lot of traffic on that. And I have to kind of caution people that, you know, in our modern sensibilities, we think that's pretty amazing, and it is amazing. We see it. We look up. It looks great in our telescopes and look in our binoculars. But you got to remember, Nostradamus didn't have a telescope or binoculars.
That's right. You are so right.
So when he was, his bias, which is an important thing for everybody to understand, the bias of a prophet, because it limits their perception. And if they even see something that's alien to their sensibilities, they will try to express it in the biases and limits of their own mental capacity. For instance, Nostradamus often talked about, used animal metaphors for modern technologies, cars, planes, iron fish or submarines, you know, strange beasts that make great tumultuous noises. You know, if you're from the 16th century and you hear in your vision of the future in our times, a warming up of even the family SUV, that'll sound like the roar of some strange animal in the pit that we call the garage.
Sure.
And so, with that in mind, when he talks about great celestial events, comets, if you want to see something that's more prophetically significant in our recent times, then look at the comet McNaught that appeared in the first few days of 2007, about a year ago, which was dramatic, especially in the southern hemisphere, with its huge 30-million-mile-long rooster tail. That's the kind of comet event that would take Nostradamus' attention or some other prophet. So if there's something of a plasma flash in the sky from what's going to happen in a few hours, that would be worth taking note for prophecy. So we'll have to see.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now I want you to go out on a limb, John, the presidential election. Are you at a point where you can pick some people?
Well, I'm in a unique situation. This is the 40-year anniversary of something I've been doing since 1968, and that has been accurately predicting, usually a year before it happens, or usually before the primary season begins, I predict who will win the popular vote. I didn't realize that's what I was doing until the election in 2000, because I always thought I was picking the winner. And I even said on Coast to Coast and other shows and documented it that I said that Al Gore would win by 500,000 votes. Well, he did win 500,000 votes, but whatever this oracle is that I use just was not tuned in to the 18th century arcane laws of our electoral college system. So, and I remember as I was coming up to that in 2000, even on this show, I was saying, you know, I have a funny feeling that I'm going to be right and equally wrong about Gore winning, and I can't explain to you what that means. And today, this cycle, a couple cycles later, I have a new interesting anomaly in this work. I see two people in this election cycle who will be president in the same way I've seen it since 68. It's another riddle. The first one I saw, which was also odd, almost 10 years ago, and I announced it on The View, in ABC's The View, when I went to New York, and I said that not only would New York State have a new Senator Clinton, because that was still a week away when I came, there was October 30th, before the elections, but in 2008 you will have a President Hillary Clinton. And, of course, people thought that was absolutely impossible. Even I thought it was absolutely impossible. But, the, you know, the oracular gift does not care what I think or what other people think about. And I don't even
know. It is what it is.
It is what it is. And I'm just as confounded because, you know, my political persuasions are not going in that direction at all. But that's, you know, to be good at this, one has to look beyond that and deal with one's own biases. The thing is that back in August of 2006, I was watching a senator from Illinois, a freshman senator from Illinois, who was getting off a plane in Kenya, and he was greeting people in Kenya, and I had that epiphany that I've always had. It's kind of this effortless effort kind of thing where it's almost as if a hand rests upon a shoulder of somebody and says, that's a president of the United States you're looking at.
Right.
And I suddenly said, I am looking at the Black Kennedy. And, you know, back then I started talking. I wrote about it in Hope Prophecy Bulletins. People who subscribe to my free bulletin know that over a year ago I wrote about that kind of future and called Obama the Black Kennedy, the fulfillment of a cycle, a 40-year cycle. It's when you're in the prophecy business, we've talked about a lot of different cycles. Well, here again is yet another cycle to rack your fevered brain with. it's a 40-year cycle of karma that happens where a lot of the things that had happened back in the 60s that were collective karmic lessons of the United States and its people, I have come back again two generations later in slightly different reverse image formats, but it's the same issues. The new frontier of the 60s has returned, but the question that disturbs me at this time, and also I must add, I feel vindicated, prophetically speaking, by what happened today when Caroline Kennedy and Teddy Kennedy, senator of Massachusetts, endorsed, basically said in so many words, this is the new Kennedy. Of course, the other half of the family, Robert Kennedy's children, are with Hillary Clinton, which is kind of interesting. The news didn't report that much.
Yeah, exactly.
So even the Kennedys are divided on who is doing what when. The thing that I saw that comes up in the same prophecy riddle for me is, are we seeing a president who will be a vice president of the winner and then become president later vice versa. Either Hillary Clinton will be vice president of Barack Obama's presidential ticket, or vice versa.
Well, they're going to have to bury their differences, John.
Oh, they will. Yeah. They will. They will even if they don't want to. I don't know. I don't think if it were Hillary was asked to be vice president that she would do it. I think she will. She will try to become the speaker, the chief of the Senate, and take over Reid's position, and set herself up for another run in the other cycle. But I still think she is. To finally answer your question, I still think she will probably win. I still feel that she's going to be the winner of this, and I also and be the nominee. Although it could go all the way to nearly to the convention before it's solved. The same is going to probably happen in the Republican race. And the thing is that I ask, and this is the prophetic question, Barack Obama is destined to become president of the United States, but I get the feeling that he is not the Kennedy, if this is a karmic ego, he's not the Kennedy of 1960. He's the John F. Kennedy of 1956. He's the man who almost became vice president on the ticket with Adlai Stevenson during the Democratic Convention. He's the man that presented himself to the world in a marvelous speech that really showed, here's somebody to watch. And I wonder if that Kennedy had somehow managed to become president in 1956, the sense I get from my oracular study of possible futures is he would have been a disaster in 56, the same great president of 60 onwards who could handle the crisis and changes that were happening would have probably been a disaster if he had come too soon to his destiny. So the question that is racking my brains and giving me fevers is Barack Obama coming too soon to his destiny? Or is this his time? And that's the question that is before the American people. And if he's coming too soon, a great president might be a disaster for the country if he comes too soon. My sense is that the destiny is that he will be asked if he wants to be the vice president. I think if he takes it, he will be positioned then to become president of the United States in 4 to 8 years. But we're talking, as I said in the beginning of the show, what prophecy is really about is which timeline are we really more possibly fulfilling at this moment. And, of course, as I said, as we are talking about it, we're changing it. Millions of people are listening to this and other shows that I'm on, and it has an effect, the butterfly effect in prophecy. And but I still say it'll be Hillary Clinton in 2008.
Regardless of who the Republicans field.
You know, I've been struggling with that. And the problem is, and I had to admit it in the book, Predictions for 2008, that, you know, I tuned into my own oracle, if you will, is what I call it. It's really not something that's very much in this time and space, but just to give it a name in the dialectics of language, the answer I got was, I don't talk about those who lose. And then I got the image, the vision that this could end up being a three-way race where the Republicans candidate could even be the third, coming in third. That we might see, we have a situation now where we may see what happened back in 1912 when Taft, President Taft, ran against Teddy Roosevelt, part of the Bull Moose or Progressive Party, third party, against Woodrow Wilson of the Democrats. I think the Bull Moose Party with Roosevelt got 10 states electoral votes, but Wilson got the majority, and Taft came in third. And we could very well see a repetition of that in 2008. There's a point where the timeline split off, and that point's coming in March. And that's the point where what's going to make that happen is whether Bloomberg thinks that he can persuade what I call, what will be called in this echo of 40 years ago, Nixon talked about the silent majority.
Yes.
Now we have the invisible majority that is kind of under the radar screen of the press, the media, and the two-party duopoly that's duopolizing politics. You see as a trailblazer of that is Ron Paul's amazing run and how he shook things up in the Republican Party, bringing in libertarian ideas. But if Bloomberg, and at this moment he is actively considering and looking at the possibilities, doing some marketing research into it. And in a way, Bloomberg, I want to get back to what I said last hour, is Bloomberg is kind of a representative of the kind of executive business billionaire who, for better or worse, can have an influence beyond mere politics in changing things. A man like Richard Branson is also an example of someone who is a private citizen but has a power and influence to use his money to actually, as he's trying to create this year, pollutionless jet airline fuel.
And he probably will, John.
Yeah, or the first privately funded spaceport. You're going to see, as I said in the last hour, the danger, of course, is obvious danger that we've already known from oligarchies and this new CEO oligarchy is that they will become a plutocracy of fascism. But the people, I saw it in the future, that people, if they get smart and adapt to this new political food chain where actually voted leaders are a step below this new aristocracy. They can convince the aristocracy because the aristocracy of the CEO requires supply and demand and profit for their money making. And if people don't buy their stuff or demand things that are really better for the world, they will change what they're selling. And it even now with this period goes into selling ethics, selling virtues. It sounds very materialistic what I'm saying, and I'm sure it's pushing a lot of people's buttons, but you watch and remember this show, and as you watch the coming 18 years, you're going to see more and more of what I'm saying is actually the new challenge beyond what we know. And Bloomberg may be the first person of that new group that will run in politics, a man who has mastered business, $11 billion profits, and uses his money to take his philanthropy into politics and statescraft. He may be one of the pioneers, hopefully, of positive, far-thinking people who will do this. And the period of Pluto's transit through Capricorn supports this kind of executive becoming a new form of leadership in the world.
John, I always enjoy your take on the Antichrist, so why don't we chat about that when we come back?
Okay.
Our special guest tonight, John Hogue, website Hogue. I'm going to spell it for you, Hogue, prophecy.com. And it's linked up right for you at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines with John Hogue, but I'll be back with him. We've got to talk with him about the Antichrist. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. It's always fascinating, John, to get your take on the Antichrist and who you think it may be, if you think he may be here.
Well, it's getting more interesting as we move into this new century, because I think that it all depends on how you decode the word Mabus, M-A-B-U-S, which is the name, the cryptic name that Nostradamus gave to the third of three antichrists that he saw in his prophecies, the first being called Paul Nealaron, which is an anagram for Napoleon Noir in French, Napoleon King. The second is Hister, which is the ancient name of the river Danube, upon which banks the man Adolf Hitler grew up, Hister, Hitler.
Uh-huh.
The third is called Mabus, conventional wisdom would say that, as the other two were Europeans, the third would also be a European. I don't rule that out, but a lot of the prophecies seem to point to a Middle Eastern figure as Mabus. The top candidate that I have felt was Mabus, this is another thing I've got to describe, is there are two prophecies that have very similar-sounding prophecies in Nostradamus. One is started with Mabus soon dies, and then it talks about the terrible destruction of people and animals from this happening. Mm-hmm. But it also talks about the third Antichrist very soon annihilated in another prophecy, which also describes in lurid detail a cataclysmic war which seems to use weapons of mass destruction, new plagues, human-manufactured plagues, etc. The real question is Nostradamus trying to talk about one man, one figure, or two? Is one causing the other to be killed, or is it the annihilation of two adversaries in a future war that when they fall early in the conflict, the real conflict begins afterwards? This is what's new with the third Antichrist, unlike the first two. The first two run their wars to the end, but the third Antichrist dies in the opening salvos.
But he comes back, doesn't he?
No, that's well, not in Nostradamus.
Okay.
That's actually an idea, perhaps even a prophetic urban legend of 2,000 years ago.
Okay.
When a number of people thought that Nero, which if you take the 666, which is the, if you take the Greek letters, which they didn't have Arabic numbers in those days, so the numerical equivalent of the name of the beast, the Antichrist, is 666. In other editions of the book of Revelation, chapter 13, it's 616. In both cases, they spell out in Greek, 666 is Nero Kaiser, 616 is Caligula Kaiser. Kaiser is Greek for Caesar. It's also been used, adopted by the Germans. In Imperial Germany is Der Kaiser, you know, Kaiser Wilhelm is Caesar Wilhelm, is literally what it means, name for their emperors. But it is a Greek word, and it basically indicates one of the strongest cases of preternism, that is, the people who believe that the prophecies of Daniel and of Revelation were actually fulfilled in the life of Christ and are not about things that are happening in our near future. The strongest evidence to support that is the fact that 666 and 616 are naming Roman emperors. The reason why Caligula comes up in some of the editions is he was the emperor that put a statue of himself as a god defiling the Holy Temple of Jerusalem, which is like worst act you could do. He had it when he took over Palestine and Judea. He had the statue placed in the Holy of Holies. Nero is an obvious possibility too, because he was a contemporary of St. John of Patmos. There is some question whether this is the same St. John who was the apostle. A lot of linguists think they were two different people. But that's still open to interpretation. What's clear is he wrote it after the destruction of Jerusalem, and he also talked about what was a common myth at the time, that Nero was wounded in the head and arose from the dead. That was a common pagan belief or urban legend that was going around, and it seems that he adopted it into the scripture. It didn't happen. As far as we know, Nero didn't have some severe fatal blow to the head and rose from the dead. But people believed it did happen. So, again, another link to the possibility that St. John was talking about, and as he says in the book of Revelation, that I am coming soon. You know, Jesus, who channeled through him, was saying, I'm coming. It's coming now, not 2,000 years from now. So, you know, when I ever get the chance, I want to sit down and write a book about this whole issue, that the book of Revelation may be about situations that have already happened, and then answer the question why it seems that we are on the verge of fulfilling many of the things that are happening in the book of Revelations in our near future. And that may very well be one of the ultimate conspiracies in prophecy, that we are over 2,000 years been induced almost in a mass prophetic hypnosis to create a future that has been dogmatically taught to us over all these centuries. And that's a rather complicated issue that will take a whole book to respond to. But anyway, that's not related to Nostradamus, the wound in the head. I still feel, well, and by the way, somebody wrote me an email, said he had to go to bed, so he didn't hear whether I was absolutely clear about who was going to be the next president, so he can go to bed.
Well, I think you were, but go ahead.
I think he was already asleep before he went to bed, because I'll just say it again. I think Hillary Clinton's going to win the presidency. Although the secondary tributary is that Barack Obama surges too soon, although I don't think he will. Anyway, so that's on the record. So he can go to bed now. The other person that I think in the end is going to be Mabus is actually Saddam Hussein, especially if you've got to sit back. There's a lot of people project on these famous prophecies. I get thousands of letters over the years where people saying, well, he's dead. People basically say, well, he's got to be this great leader and he's got to be, people project what they think he should be, but the prophecy doesn't say any of that, qualify any of that. That's stuff we add to it. It may be correct because Nostradamus was very good at making you look between the lines for the answer. But, here you got some interesting things. The Antichrist is very soon annihilated. 27 years his bloody war will last. That's where it states that in one part of the prophecies. And then there is a reference to the third Antichrist in his letters, prophetic letters, which indicate the war is 25 years long. So you have this 27-year war and a 25-year war. Now, here's an interesting fact. Saddam Hussein, when he came to power, and within, I think, less than a year or a year and a half, was already at war with Iran, which dominated the 80s. He had a little respite, and then he goes to war with Kuwait, invades it, ends up with Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and then this long 11-year kind of low-grade, no-fly zone war with America, with punctuations from the Clinton era and every once in a while of big bombings of Saddam's world. And then finally that leads to the climatic war, an invasion in 2003. He is, by December of that year, caught. The insurrection continues. The war continues as he's in jail. And he's hung almost exactly on the 27th year anniversary of when he first came into power. 27 years his war will last. And he dies when a great comet passes. The day that Saddam Hussein was hung at the end of 2006, I think it was on the 30th, 31st, depending on what part of the round world you're on, that was the day that Comet McNaught first became visible to the naked eye. And then within a week's time became the
brighter,
most dramatic comet, as we said earlier, the kind of comet that Nostradamus would recognize from his own limited biases about, he didn't have binoculars or telescope, a big comet that you couldn't mistake it, huge sign in the sky. The comet will pass when Mabus soon dies. Now, the question then is, where's the terrible destruction of people and animals that are also in the prophecy? The only time that he talks about people and animals dying together, which is a kind of chilling aspect in his prophecies. Now, often people come to me and they say, hey, depleted uranium has been killing people as a man-made plague. It must be that. Or when 9/11 happened, people said, oh, the terrible destruction of people and animals, of 3,000 people dying, that must be it. And I'm saying, when I look at a phrase like this, and Nostradamus does not use a phrase like this in his 36,000 words other than in this prophecy, 36,000 words of prophecy, I look at that and I go, this has got to be something really big and apocalyptic. This is not 20,000, 100,000. It's not even a million. It's tens of millions of people dying. It's a huge apocalyptic event. So, and the other thing that comes up in our very impatient modern bias, we expect, you know, when he says very soon annihilated, we think 2 seconds later.
Yes, exactly.
But he's a 16th century man. 2 years later might be really fast in a person who grew up in a much slower pace of history.
10 years may be fast.
10 years, yes. So, and the other thing, too, in the other candidates, Mabus also crunches out in Latin letters into, if you take the phonetics of Arabic names, Usama, take the B from bin Laden, you get Mabus. You also get, as we've talked before, the playing the game of GW actually being upside down for MA, mm-hmm. B-U-S, add the H, which you can always subtract and add a letter. Now, it gets even more craftier because of Barack Obama. O-B-A-M-A becomes M-A-A-B-O. Vowels can be switched in anagramming to a similar sounding vowel. O's often are replaced by U's. So that becomes, you drop the redundant A and replace it with that free letter, and you get Mabus.
That's strange.
So
that one is strange.
So that kind of puts a whole new wrinkle into this prophetic sleuthing of what, you know, it's like a detective story. Where is the evidence leading us now? Is it saying, and then you then look at certain other prophecies talking about the black one doing this and that and related to a war in Mesopotamia, which is the ancient name for Iraq, by a crusading army that will lose against the law, the Sharia of Islam, in Mesopotamia. The black one will make him make the angry one repent of it. Who then now is this black one? I used to talk about this black one being the black-robed Ayatollahs, and it may still be. But now we have, perhaps, depending on how the American people vote, a possibility of a as I've called the black Kennedy, you know, that the black is a description of the person's race, not his demeanor or his clothing. It could be a major leader involved in the Middle East. And it also means that Mabus may be the victim of the third Antichrist as well. So it doesn't mean that, I'm going to make it very clear, it doesn't mean that Barack Obama is the third Antichrist, okay?
All right.
But
okay.
Yeah, it doesn't rule it out either. Mabus could also be the victim of the third Antichrist.
Now, what about the Iranian situation, John? It just seems like it's hanging over all of us.
Well, in last year, in June, we talked about my book, Nostradamus, The War with Iran, where I looked at these interesting prophecies that point to a lot of our near future events triggered off of what happens in ancient Persia in a modern context with that war in Mesopotamia. You know, this is the man who also predicted the Six-Day War and called it the War of 6 Days and the importance of Israel returning. Nostradamus was born a Jew, Christianized, but he's still under the secrecy or the mask of Christianity, did many things that were related, especially in his astrology predictions, to ancient Jewish traditions of prophecy. The thing that I said a year ago was that there's a plan B to the Iran issue, to the neoconservative movement, which in the book I went all the way back to 1992, following the path of their own, of the movement's manifestos, and how they basically at times reverberate like Mein Kampf did when Hitler said all the things he was going to do and then did. The neoconservative manifesto, which starts with the earliest apostles like Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz, back in 92, made it very clear that certain things had to happen for their idea of American hegemony and the control of the oil and the takedown of the two most important enemies, which they saw back in 92 after the Cold War would be Iraq and Iran. and because they were over the important oil reserves that the civilization depended on, and they were rogue states that needed to be taken over and converted to democracy.
Isn't it amazing, John, how that unfolds?
Well,
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's the oil, baby.
It is, and I used to get really raked over the coals, dragged over the coals about that, calling this 2 years before it even happened. I predicted that the current president on Coast to Coast with Ian Punnett, I talked about before he was even the Florida thing was sorted out. I said, "This, if Bush becomes president, here's a future timeline that you engage, and it leads to 2 years into his first term, into a major war in the Middle East, a new Vietnam, most likely against Saddam Hussein's Iraq. He'll get in, beat him quickly, and then end up in a guerrilla war in a quagmire." And it happened. And I said the motivation was oil. People thought that I was very unpatriotic for saying that and anti-American, but those voices are silent now because that did happen. And, you know, that's part of the prophecy, the occupational hazard. You say things that upset people because, you know, we want the future to go a certain way. And, you know, I've been upsetting a lot of people on the right of political persuasion now for the last 8 years. Now that it looks like it's going to be a future, even if Bloomberg runs against either Obama or Clinton, I think he will lose. But he'll make a much better showing for independent voters than has ever been done since 1912, and even better than 1912 with Roosevelt, and we've actually launched a truly solid movement of third party, of a third party, even though he will lose if he runs. So if it's Clinton, which I think it will be, or Obama, if I'm wrong, the next 4 to 8 years now. It's the turn for all the Democrats and the left of center people to think I'm being mean with their future. You know? So here's that's the thing we have before us, an oil war, and we are going to be in the Middle East, by the way, for 10 years. The president
at least
is right. And McCain is actually courageous enough. There's a good chance of being the candidate the Republicans will run against the others is being honest in selling the real reality is that we are not, and I don't care what the lofty demagoguery of Obama or Clinton would like to say otherwise. I predict that whoever the next Democrat president is in office, you're going to see more U.S. forces in the Middle East, not less.
Interesting, John. Stay with us. We're going to take phone calls with John Hogue next on Coast to Coast AM.